I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Simon Woodruff. Simon is the creator of Yo Sushi, the conveyor belt sushi restaurant chain, which opened in 1997 and now has over 100 sites around the world, including one that opened recently here in New York City. He then launched Yotel, the world's most radical hotel, in 2007, which operates a 700-room site here in New York City, with Singapore, San Francisco, and Boston opening later this year, and Miami, London, Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and Dubai Business Bay opening in 2018. Not content with resting after all that, Simon is now working on Yo Home, his reinvention of the city apartment, which he plans to launch later this year. Simon left school at the age of 16 and spent 30 years in the entertainment business, designing and staging concerts for many artists, including the Moody Blues, Madness, Rod Stewart, Stevie Wonder, and George Michael before embarking on his Yo adventures in the mid-90s. Simon, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thank you, and thank you for that introduction.
Great bio, great background. You've done some really interesting things in your life, and I'm sure we're going to have a great conversation.
Perfect.
So you recently wrote, "When kids are 13 or 14, everything is possible, and imagination is still just about intact. What we then do, for the most part, is to educate the imagination out of our children and then put the fear of God into them that their life will go wrong without conformity and exams. It's not healthy for creativity, and it's certainly not healthy for success." So, Simon, what would you say is healthy for success?
Well, I think, you know, there's generally a broad agreement, I think, that children growing up, you know, we're going through a kind of radical period of change, certainly here in the UK and in Europe we are.
And I think here in the States we are too.
Yeah, is that right? We're really thinking about how do you educate children for this new world, rather like architects who don't get taught to draw at university. At architect school, they get taught about what is architecture. Kids are going to learn mathematics and a certain amount of history and geography, but what we really want to do is to educate well-rounded people who can handle the pressures and enormous stresses and strains of living in this 21st century world that you and I, David, similar age, you know, early 1950s, invented. You know, we've invented a world that is pretty hard for kids to live in and to grow up into. And to educate well-rounded individuals is much more important, certainly to have as a background, than academic qualifications. Though that said, I hope if you're going to be a brain surgeon, you will be well-educated in brain surgery. But I think generally, well-rounded people, certainly in business, is what we want.
Yeah, I think also in life, too. I think business and life are very much intertwined. And the way we think, behave, and react to the situations around us impact what we do in business as well as what we do outside of business.
You know, there's an expression you hear often, which you go, you're talking about a deal or something, and people go, "Oh, well, this is different. This is not friendship. This is about business." And I think in my world, there's absolutely no difference between the two. The way I behave in business is the way I behave in my personal life. And I think that kids growing up, you know, look at the difficulties that people have in their marriage relationships. Look at the difficulties often that some leaders have, you know, in terms of relationships with people. And then I look at the really successful people. You know, all sorts of people can be successful. Good people, bad people, people who are good at figures, people like me who can hardly read a balance sheet. You know, nice people, not so nice people. There's all sorts of different things that go to make up success. But generally, I think the people who are most successful in the broader sense of the world, you know, creating happiness around themselves and doing well for the world, are generally pretty well-balanced, nice people. And that, I think, is what we want to do with our education in the next period. I went to see, what's he called, Eric Schmidt, the Google guy, the other day, and he was saying that in a one-hour lesson, The two things they were really focusing on was education and health in the long-term future. And that in a one-hour lesson in a school, you know, for quite young kids even, probably 50 minutes would be self-study and 10 minutes would be lecturing. Because once you can get, if you know what it's like when you get, as a kid or as an adult, when you get obsessed with something, you can get into researching it and you absolutely love it. And when you really do love something like that, and I'm sure that mathematics will be taught as games and all of these things, and that kids will self-study. And once you get that, you get enormous learning going on.
And have you seen this applied to learning that impacts the way people can achieve greater success once they're out in the business world and they're past school age?
I can't think of any examples, certainly not in schools. I think that's only really on the tip of the iceberg of being done. But I think it doesn't require a great deal of imagination to realize. You just look at yourself, you know. I know that in a day or a week, when I'm what I call in the groove, I can get unbelievable amounts achieved. You know, I'm personally, everybody's got their own thing, but I'm at my happiest when I have a pencil and a paper and a new concept and an idea and a telephone with me, and I'm sketching out ideas and working out how something will work and calling up people on an impulse to do something new. That's my kind of forte. That's where I'm at my happiest. And I know that when I'm doing that, I can get unbelievable things done in a day or a week. And when I'm not in the groove, you get to the end of the week and what did you really do? You know, really very little got achieved. So getting in the groove is the way to make things happen. And that involves, enthusiasm as much as anything. Well, what I wish for our kids, if we're still talking about that process, is not lots of academic qualifications, but certainly in business anyway, but a great enthusiasm for life and ability to be able to deal with other people in their personal and business lives without getting, you know, on a fairly equanimous, you know, the sense of getting on well with people, I think.
And Simon, since you left school at the age of 16, is this what happened to you?
No, absolutely not. And I guess I'm only talking about it because it wasn't what happened to me. I left school, you know, as an angry young man, embittered by my school experience. And in a sense, you know, that sort of anger, you know, is always the opposite in life, isn't there? There's that sort of anger was a really useful thing to me because it drove me to get on. You know, it was sort of arrogance. I can do everything better than you can do. Fortunately, as I've got into my older age, I've realized that that is actually a delusion. But for a long time, I really did believe that. So, you know, that anger. So I didn't. And I think I left quite a lot of skeletons along the way and I made quite a lot of mistakes and I fell out with people along the way. And it was you could look back over my life and I can make a very good story out of it today. It was a rocking and rolling story that took me all over the place. But I don't think it was particularly happy a lot of the time. And it's only really in the last, since Yo and even in the last 10, 15 years that, you know, I found a place where I can do and achieve, you know, as much as I ever did, but without having to be quite so much on the edge in that sense. So it's only, I think, by doing the wrong things that I've seen a way that one can do the right things. And I hope perhaps, you know, some learning from my mistakes might help others.
So what shifted in your life 15 to 20 years ago that enabled you to do things, as you describe it, the right way that creates greater happiness?
Well, you know, you could put it all sorts of ways and how much do you know about yourself, really? But I think probably I realized that it was too much of a train wreck going on. I'm exaggerating to make the point. It wasn't that bad. And I've still got lots of friends from all those periods. But, you know, I was very, very driven. At one point, I learned that people used to call me the steamroller. And a steamroller is that, I don't know what the word is in American. It's the machine that drives along the road, flattening out the tarmac when you're laying a road.
Yeah, we call it a steamroller too.
Steamroller, exactly. Well, anyway, I was called the steamroller. And I think I was a bit like that. You know, I'd see the end goal. And I'd do whatever it took. I remember I used to come into the office on a Monday morning and people would say, how was your weekend? And in my head, and I'm afraid that I used to say it as well, I'd go, well, what's that got to do with anything? You know, so I was pretty insensitive. So that's what happened to me. So what changed? you know, age helps. You learn along the way. I was very open to things. You know, I've gone through a lot of good change, really, and I think I'm pretty happy, and the people around me are as well, which is a good place.
Simon, do you think it's possible in today's world for younger people to have the kind of balance that you have now?
I absolutely do. I mean, I think that, you know, when you look at the reality TV shows, whether they're about business or life or anything, and, you know, love them or hate them, they are at some level teaching people about life and relationships. And you only have to go into a bookstore or on the internet and look at the business books. And most of them are pretty close to the personal development books. And that I think there is a sense now in business that looking after your people within organizations is the way to create success within organizations, and that actually the business part is easy compared to the people. And the bit that stands in the way is usually the individual. There's an English publisher, very, very successful, died 2 years ago, called Felix Dennis. And he said this, which I think is very good. This is about business. But in a sense that business is easy and it's people that get in the way. And he said, ideas, we've had them since Eve first met Adam. But take it from me, execution's the key. Good fortune, the truth is, the harder you work, the more that you sweat, the luckier you get. The money, go find a likely investor to get what you need, you toadies to greed. The talent, go find it, but first wine and dine it. It's tedious work with a talented jerk. To win it, you've got to be in it, but never be late to quit and cut bait. Expansion is vanity. Profit is sanity, overhead begs, and it walks on two legs. The first step, just do it and bluff your way through it. Remember to duck, Godspeed, and good luck. And that's called, everybody will want to know that, well, they usually do, but that's called How to Get Rich, which is a poem by Felix Dennis.
That's remarkable. Simon, you've also written, I've gotten lots of outside help, but nothing seems to work. What's been your experience with help?
Did I write that?
Yes.
Did I write that? Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a direct quote.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure that's right. I'm sure I've said lots of things along the way. You know, I've always told people to go and get mentors. And I've certainly told people, go and ask advice. You know, it's amazing who will go. First of all, it's amazing who will answer your telephone calls if you do it the right way. And it is amazing who will give you advice if you're prepared to really listen and not stand there, as I've done a lot of my life, and say, yes, but, or thinking you know the answers. In fact, I've never really had very many mentors, so I haven't practiced what I preach. But I think it is a very good way. What I do say is, certainly in startup businesses, which has been my world for many years, don't ask somebody if you should do it or you shouldn't do it. That's the one question that is banned, because, you know, if they knew, they'd go and do it themselves. But, you know, I filter the information that comes in, but I do try and listen very, very carefully to what advice people give me. But some of it gets filtered and puts in the garbage. Some of it gets taken on board to use, and some of it gets stored as a maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. But as I say, I never ask people, do you think I should go ahead and do it?
So what's a good way to ask the question?
Well, I mean, you can ask a question anyway, but I mean, do you know that thing, David, that, you know, I'm sure maybe you're better than me, but, you know, I have a temptation to ask a question that is loaded because I already know the answer. And actually getting to hear criticism of an idea, or setting something up so you're open to hear somebody's criticism of something, is quite difficult to do. So, you know, I think if you're pretty clear, if you're generous to somebody and you allow them to criticize or have another point of view, I often think that if you're ever in an argument or in a difficult situation with another person, or somebody's being aggressive towards you, the best response is to lean towards them and to say, tell me more. That's where you learn. In the tell me more moment.
Mm-hmm. What's one of the most remarkable things you've heard when you've said, tell me more?
Well, how personal can I be? I mean,
that's up to you.
Yeah, it's true. I think when I first started Yo Sushi in 1997, I ran that business for 3 years, and I took on a very good operation. I was an amateur, I'd never been in restaurants, but I managed to get the thing up to 5 through hell and high water. And I took on a very experienced operations director called Robin Rowland, who is the CEO of that business to this day, just opened in New York. And he came on as the ops director. And after about a year, he said to me, "You know, Simon, you're an absolute inspiration. Without you, none of this would have happened. But you're also a nightmare." And he said, "You change your mind all the time, and it's very difficult to work with you. And unless you're going to listen to me, and in fact, I think you should let me run the business, not just be the operations director," he said, "eventually I will leave." And that was pretty difficult to hear. But I did lean forward to him and I said, "Tell me more." And that was gave permission to explain. And it wasn't all criticism. And it was a learning thing. And Robin and I both learned and acknowledged to each other that, you know, we were different. You know, I am an entrepreneur still to this day. I'm very good at ideas. I'm good at getting things going. I'm good at getting people inspired. I'm good at talking about it. Robin is an operator. He's extremely good. If I have a problem, if something's wrong in one of the restaurants, I have to go and walk around the block twice doing deep breathing exercises to calm down before I can tell somebody how to correct it. Robin will just put it on a piece of paper on his legal pad, prioritize all the things that need to be done and work through them with his team one at a time. He's a process-driven operator. And in this world, you need both. You need the operator and you need the entrepreneur. He couldn't have done it without me and I couldn't have done it without him. So I really learned something there by listening to what could have been taken as crit, you know, could have been a kind of position. Well, you know, I could have easily said, "Well, if that's how you feel, you go and get another job." And I didn't. I then allowed him to take over. The thing wobbled for 3 months. And within a year, I was saying to people, you know, they run it much better than I would ever have run it. And then I was on to looking at the next thing, which was then Yotel after that. It allowed me to free up and go and do the next thing. So that was a good example of how listening really could help.
Yeah, I think it also touches on something else, which is, it always strikes me that in America, there seems to be this myth of individual success. And I don't know of any situation in business or actually in life where individuals have really been successful on their own. There's this collaboration that needs to happen so that you can combine the different kinds of strengths that different people have in order to get an enterprise to succeed. And I think what you've just described is a great example of that.
Yeah, it's exactly right. You know, that took a bit of learning. Because as I said earlier, you know, I was under the delusion that I could do everything better than everybody, including Robin Rowland. But what I learned was that that is actually a delusion. So, yes.
So, Simon, in creating the Yo brand, you have clearly done something that is different than the way many other people would see a situation. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about how important it is to be kind of like outrageously good in order to stand out in today's complex world.
Well, the way I see it is that, as you say, today's complex world, that it is a, you know, in order to just survive in this world in business, your product, what you do, has to be great, 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 great. You know, that is a given. You know, in a restaurant, the menu can't be good or the food can't just be good. It has to be something else. And when I was in the theater years ago, they used to say, it was a rather sort of annoying expression, that they used to say there's a ziz in showbiz. And I say there's got to be a ziz in every business in the world. And in fact, when we opened the first Yo Sushi, we had conveyor belts going around. We had call buttons that you pressed. And instead of calling a waiter or a waitress, the call buttons used to digitally say things like, "I want my sake now. Bring me more food," or whatever it was. And people who didn't even like sushi used to come in and press the buttons. And we even had robots that served the drinks in the early restaurants. In fact, there's a call to bring them back these days. But we had these robots and people came in who didn't even like sushi. The kids loved these robots. And they used to stop automatically if you got in their way. And in fact, I put digital voices in. One of them used to say, after 9 o'clock at night, it used to say, "Move your fat butt. Somebody's got a job to do in this restaurant." And I remember we opened and hearing American tourists going, "Did you hear, Joan, what that robot, that, oh, it was a robot." And I realized that if you change the landscape of the world, you can do anything. Anyway, I've gone off on a tangent to your question. What was your question again?
My question was about being outrageously good. And actually, before you even answer that, I have another question about what you just said, which is about the ziz in your biz.
Yeah.
How do you find your ziz?
Okay, so where do ideas come from? I mean, if we go right back to where you started at the beginning of this conversation, you know, I left school at 16, so the imagination was never educated out of me. I didn't have the fear of God in me about the world. I thought that everything was possible. And another thing I did, funnily enough, I mean, it was just a coincidental thing, is I never had a television for a long time. I was always busy out doing things. I wasn't indoctrinated in a sense. And I think if you're lucky enough to have that, and you're lucky enough to allow your imagination to flow free, you know, you can imagine what the future would be. And one of the things that I like, when I was at school, I always used to think, I wish I could go back in time to, you know, when I left school, go back when I was at school, because it's so powerful, isn't it? If you knew then what you know now, just think how successful you would have been at school or with girls or whatever it was. I have this thing that I call imagined hindsight. So in my imagination, whatever sector I'm looking at, you know, business sector, I like in my imagination, one of the questions I often ask people, I say, what sort of, you know, in your business, what will be happening, not in 5 or 10 years, but in 20 or 30 years? And they go, well, I don't know. And I say, well, if you did know, what do you think it would be? You know, imagine how that could go. And often we know more about the future if we've got time to look than we think. And I like to go way into the future. And then see if I can take some of those things so that I can quantum leap ahead of other people. So that's one way, imagined hindsight, of generating what things could be. Because we are very bound, and even I am, by how things have been done in the past. And the other thing is that I am a great champion of the customer. So in conversations with my partners and people who work for me, they're always saying, well, how can we save money? How can we make more money out of this? And I go, I will always champion what's the best thing for the customer. And that gives you some insight into, you know, because actually I think in this new world we're moving into, one of the things that Yo stands for as a brand, I mean, we're like Virgin and a lot of the new brands, we're fun, cheeky, you know, all of those things. But I think that what we really do is what I'm trying to do is to give to everybody what rich people have. You know, it sounds kind of crass, but it's, you know, we read about, you know, whoever you are reads about, or your customers read about these very rich people flying on private jets. You know, when I was a kid growing up, you know, the only people who had limos were film stars in New York. Now people rent them for their children's parties. And in a sense, that's what I'm trying to do with everything, is to give to everybody. And I think basically what I'm talking about is that not only do you have to give a better service or product than has ever been given before, but you have to give it at a lower price than it's ever been given before. And if you can do both of those, that you can only do both of those things by using quantum leaps, what I call quantum leaps in imagination of how you could do something differently. And if you can deliver those two things, you'll be way ahead of your competitors.
What's an example of one thing that you've provided that gives customers a taste of what rich people have?
Well, look, if I'd gone and done market research and I'd said, okay, David, you and your friends are my target audience, although I don't have a target audience, my target audience, I always say, is people who are young at heart. But if I'd said, would you like to eat raw fish off conveyor belts with robots serving the drinks? You're hardly going to say yes. And with our new hotels, our airport, Yotel Airs, which is these hotel rooms in the airports that where the windows face onto the corridor and you can rent rooms by the hour. And in fact, you know, we rent every room more than twice a day, 200% occupancy, call it. And the magic words I always think are, you know, and if I'd done market research, said, would you like to sleep in a 100-square-foot room with no natural light? You're not going to say yes, are you? But when we opened those hotel rooms, the first ones, of course, in New York, they're bigger, but in the city centers. But when we opened them first in the airport, people walked in and they said what I call the magic words are, which are, this is so obvious. Why didn't somebody do this before?
And what is the taste that the customers are getting that rich people have?
Well, they're in those hotels in 100 square feet. They're getting 4-star luxury for half the price of a hotel room. So in the premium rooms in those hotels and all of our hotels, the beds deploy at the press of a button, rather like first class on an aeroplane, to go from a lounge seat into a high quality super Egyptian cotton sheets. And so in a very small room, it has incredibly good use of space, and you have to go on the internet and have a look to it to see, understand how that works. Sushi was always high end and high end price. And once you put it on conveyor belts, we were able to bring the price down because we had lots and lots of people going through because people would be in and out in a short period of time. And Yohome, which is my new project, we're taking studio apartments of 400, 500, and 600 square feet, but we're putting moving parts in, rather like the scenery you have in when you go to the theater and you see things moving. So things move in the room, so you can change the room. The room, the 400, 500, 600 square foot, is the size of your bedroom, your sitting room, your dining room, your kitchen, and your party room and your office all in the same room, because the room converts like a transformer toy. So then you're giving people what rich people have by using a leap of imagination. Again, if I'd done market research and all that, you're probably sitting there listening to the Yohome thinking, I can't imagine that. But I think when you walk in, I know it, when you walk in, you'll go, this is so obvious. Why didn't somebody do it before? And large companies aren't able to do that. It's only individuals and small groups of people who can do those things and prototype them and then have people walk in and be surprised by how, you know, I've never been a gap in the market merchant because I don't think people do know what they want in the future. You know, what do customers want? They don't know. They want leaders to hold up a red flag and say, follow me. I'm taking you, the Pied Piper, if you like, to another land. And that's very exciting in the future.
Simon, whom do you know who's been really successful at smashing plateaus?
Well, I always find that question so hard because it's a bit like, you know, who have been your great influences? But, you know, over here in the UK, it sounds corny, but, you know, when I was growing up, Richard Branson, he was a couple of years younger than me, but Richard Branson at the age of 17 was all of our hero because he was the guy who was most like the, he was a retiring pop star, if you like, but he didn't wear ties. You know, it's the days that people in boardrooms used to, you know, wear cufflinks and ties, and it was all very prim. And he was just a kind of rebel businessman. And he was the beginning of making business popular. And I think that what started happening with him and then with a group of people after him, and I was in there as well 20 years ago, with the first of the TV shows, we did one over here called Dragon's Den, which is Shark Tank in America, and a whole series of them as well, including the one that our friend Mr. Trump was on. You know, but love those things or hate them, actually, they made this word entrepreneur popular and fashionable. And it's the reason that you're doing a podcast that probably gets enormous audiences, because we're all interested in that. I heard an interesting quote from Chuck Berry, who died recently. He said that if, you know, well, I heard a couple of quotes I liked about from Chuck Berry. One was, I don't care what anybody else says at the risk of being immodest. I always wanted to be famous and I was willing to do whatever it took to be famous. But he also said, if you want to be a pop star, go to business school or learn about business. I thought that was interesting.
It's so true.
What I'm saying is that business is what we all do at some level, even if it's just buying a house and watching it go up in value over a period of time or trading with our car. You know, we all do it at some level. Even having a job in these days is a bit like being in business. You know, and that poem that I read tells you how relatively simple business is. It's the human beings that stand in the way that are complicated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Simon, what do we have to look forward to from you in the near future? And how can listeners learn more about you and what you're up to?
Well, Yo Sushi, you know, I actually am now the licensor of Yo Sushi. I sold it and left it to others. That's what I've done. They're opening in America now. So that's very exciting. Yotel are in America. I always say the pathway of British companies coming to America and trying to prove themselves is paved with graveyards. And we've been trying for many years, and I think it's now happening. So that's pretty exciting. Yo Sushi is over there. Yotel is opening a lot of hotels in America. In fact, far more than anywhere else. And certainly we're not really a British company in that sense. And Yo Home is my latest offering, which the first one opens. And I hope that will roll out all over the world. New build blocks of apartments called Yo. with these moving parts. And then there's a whole series of things that are lined up to follow it. We've got Yozo and the spa and Yotopia, floating islands, would you believe, and all sorts. And somebody wants to do a money business. I said, what would that be called? They said Yodo. And somebody even said that you should go into the funeral business, Simon. And I said, well, what would you call that? They said Yo Below. So I thought Yo Below would be good to put on my gravestone. There's a famous comedian over here called Spike Milligan. He said, on my gravestone, I want it to say, I told you I was ill. And I wondered what would be on my gravestone. And I could, if I got buried down there, I could say Yo Below.
Sounds great. Well, Simon, how can listeners learn more about you? How can they follow you? Where can they find you?
Well, you know, if you put in Yo, you'll get it all over. I think the sort of holding, the place you can access it all is www.yo.co.uk.
Sounds great. Simon, this has been a really remarkable discussion. You have a really interesting story, and I love the way you think about creating a better future for everybody. So thank you so much for taking the time to come on Smashing the Plateau today.
Good. And in Japan, they don't say good luck. They say keep going. So that's what I say to your listeners. Keep going.
And I say the same back to you. Keep going. My guest today has been the founder of Yo, Simon Woodruff. Thank you again, Simon, for joining us. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.